Welcome, Xbox Live subscribers, to episode 54 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast. The podcast where science and magic are harnessed to bring you the best in podcast entertainment. I'm Tom.
I'm Rick.
I'm Brian.
And if you haven't guessed from our intro, tonight's topic is our initial impressions of the Xbox One video game entertainment system. Before we jump in with our first impressions, though, why don't we tell you what new, exciting release notes we have to offer from our lives. Brian, hit it.
I spent most of my week miniature gaming of some sort. I was obsessing over the last couple of days of the Robotech Kickstarter. And I actually, I got back to Malifaux a little bit. I was working on this really cool concept for one of the bigger demons that I wanted to do, but couldn't. And I finally found the right piece available online. So that's kind of killer. Now I'm excited about painting Malifaux again. And I did a mini con on Saturday, which was very mini, but kind of fun. I liked it. I'm kind of hoping they do things with that.
Cool. So MiniCon is a new con to the South Florida area, or?
I don't know who does what or anything like that. I don't really follow all of the promoters as well as I should, but apparently this gentleman used to do some cons in Central/North Florida, and I guess he moved, or I don't know why he stopped doing that, but now he's doing some down here. So it's new to us, which is good enough.
Cool. Any highlights?
It's actually a neat little geek networking thing. I was trying to recruit you guys to go see it one time a couple of weeks ago when we were at AGS. And we left a flyer in the store. Brian, who you may remember from our awesome interview, picked it up and was like, hey, I should go present at this. So he called him up and got a booth, and he had like half of his stock there and was doing all right. He said he's, you know, good promotion and all that kind of stuff.
Cool.
So we kind of made that happen inadvertently. I like that.
Nice. We're like the Inspector Gadget of making things come together. No, we didn't mean to, but it still happened. All right, fine. No more Inspector Gadget references. Awesome, man. I'm glad both that you had fun at MiniCon and that we were able to, you specifically were inadvertently able to make a connection happen. Over to you, Rickster. What has been going on with you?
I've been doing nothing at all. Since our last guest, the one, the only Chuck Wendig, I was inspired to go and look for some new books to read, because some of the stuff he was talking about sounded pretty badass, or pretty BA, as I like to say, copying from you, obviously. And I downloaded one of his 99-cent self-published deals off of Amazon that he was talking about. It's called Irregular Creatures, and so far, pretty goddamn good. I like it. I like the way he writes. He writes like he talks, and that's a big thing with me. I have a hard time finding, you know, a writing style that is comfortable for me. And so far, what I've read of his is 18 thumbs up from a mutant. I love it.
Cool. Writes like he talks, and he talks like a cool son of a bitch who you want to hang out with all the time.
Exactly. There you go. So I'm digging it. So 99 cents, Irregular Creatures on Amazon.
I guess I'll bring it over to me. It was a pretty sweet week. Let's see, we forgot to report on this last week, so I'll include it in this week. Went with none other than you, Rick, and your lovely companion in life, Kim, to see Iron Man 3. That was awesome. Sort of a very fitting end to, I guess, what was supposed to be a trilogy. I don't know. In addition, I flew out here to Seattle after successfully packing up all my geeky gear to include my Wii U and all my Arduino stuff, but not my PS3. So Ni No Kuni updates are going to have to be held off on for a few months, unfortunately. I would say half of my luggage was geeky stuff. It's pretty sad, actually, just stuff that no normal traveler would deem necessary. But made it out here, and on the plane on the way out, was able to see Wreck-It Ralph on the in-flight entertainment system.
What? Nice!
Yeah, they had it on there. I was like, this is sweet. So I watched that movie like 1.5 times before I switched over and watched to another movie. That movie's really good. Landed, got off the plane, got picked up by my friend, and then she took me into town, and we went immediately to see the new Star Trek movie. And I highly recommend that movie. It was awesome. It was better. Yeah, I'll say it was better than the first one. I really liked the first one.
Yeah, the first one was awesome.
Definitely recommend it. I like that this is a successful reboot, and I like the way they've just kind of done like dimension forking. You really, especially in this movie, get the sense that events from another movie in the alternate universe sort of just played out differently. It was really cool. I don't think I'm allowed to put spoilers out there, so I'll just leave it at that.
Star Trek.
Yeah, and did a successful, yes, I did a successful Facebook trolling campaign by posting that I love Star Trek. And nobody corrected me. I think a lot of people know me too well now, so it's kind of bummed about that. But it inspired other friends to do trolling posts, and they got corrections, so that was cool. Apart from that, just raring to go for this episode. Today, got to watch the Xbox One reveal on my Xbox 360, as I'm sure you guys watched as well. And that brings us into today's topic, which is the Xbox One.
For our local South Florida listeners, that's the Xbox Uno.
Yes. South
Xbox
of the Dade
One.
County, the Xbox One. That's good. For our Dade County listeners, the Xbox Uno, or One, if you prefer, north of the Broward Line, could go either way. We are the Multicultural Nerd Extravaganza Podcast. However, we don't speak Spanish, so you'll have to get a translator or subtitle this somehow.
So let's start with the name.
Yeah,
yays or nays?
Nay.
Yeah, it seemed a little... Don't other people use One as their product name or something? It just seems kind of derivative for some reason. Like, I've heard it somewhere before.
Yeah, PS1.
It drove me nuts that the name was created just for that one cheesy line in the beginning. The one system where you can do this. The one system where you can do that. The one system. The Xbox One. Now, from now on, it has no more relevance. It's just there.
Well, it has relevance if you take that as more than a slogan and interpret it as a strategy, which I believe it is. They are definitely, and this ties perfectly into our set-top box episode, pursuing a set-top box strategy, as is Nintendo, as is Sony. And they definitely want this gadget to be the central hub of your entertainment life. So they want this to be the one device that unifies your disorganized, haphazard living room.
And I like it on that aspect, but as an actual name, I don't like... I don't hate it, but I don't really... It seems a little meh.
Yeah.
I think the Xbox set-top box would have been a better name.
Or just something more... Yeah, the Xbox set-top box. It would have rhymed, yeah. Well, no. I was trying to think out how to work that another way, but I came out with sex box. And I don't
the
think they
sex,
want...
The set-top Xbox. I don't know.
Well, Xbox One it is. Whatever, we'll get used to it, I guess. Maybe we thought 360 was dumb, too. I don't even remember. It's been so long. I'm just glad we got new systems coming out, because this generation has dragged on long enough. With the name out of the way, I guess we can kind of get into...
The way it looks? Like a VCR that mated with a, I don't know, 1970s dorm room toaster oven?
Looks like luggage to me.
You don't like the look?
Dude, okay, I will be the first one to admit, I am without a doubt an Xbox fanboy, an Xbox 360 fanboy, I should say, because I was converted. So I'm a true, true fanboy, because my heart belonged to Sony and the PlayStation up until the PS3. Once PS3 came out, I jumped fucking ship and tied an anchor to my own leg, dude, and sunk myself to the bottom of the ocean. And I gave up on gaming consoles because that's how bad I hated it. I didn't like the way it looked. I didn't like the no rumble. I didn't like anything about it. And I was so heartbroken that I left. And then little by little, I was kept gaining interest and stuff. And then eventually, like I think it was only 2 years ago, I got my first 360. And then a couple months after that, I got my R2-D2 360. And so now I have, in a two-bedroom apartment, I have three Xbox 360 systems and love them absolutely to death. So for me to stand up and proudly proclaim that thing looks like a piece of shit, it's got to be true. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, you're 1080 deep in Xboxes, the way, if my math is correct.
Exactly.
And they're, it's off-putting. You know, if you didn't like the way that, what is it called, piano finish or whatever on like the PS3, then you definitely aren't going to like this, because I think that's what they went with. Is it called Piano Black or something?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I was talking about the way the graphics looked on it. I just always, everything looked like it was skating on ice, but that's in another episode.
Oh, I see.
So.
I see.
Yeah, but I am looking forward to the Xbox One Slim.
That's looking way forward. That's like 5 years forward.
Yeah, but that's probably when I'll adopt it, so it's fine.
Who knows what that'll look like? Because this already looks pretty... it doesn't. I didn't get a sense for scale, but it looks smaller than an Xbox 360, right?
What?
Yeah,
it looks as big as my refrigerator. What are you talking about?
It didn't look big to me on the table. Was it large?
Dude, how big did you think that guy was?
I thought, well, I'm trying to remember it now. I wasn't paying attention relative to, I was more fixated on the controller and seeing the friggin', the Kinect looked really imposing and large.
I think that the box itself is only 18 inches wide, but it's 73 inches deep.
No, it's not. It's not 6 feet deep. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It's okay. It's showing a controller sitting, mind you, the controller is like 3 feet in front of it. All right. It's a large system. It doesn't seem gargantuan to me, though, because I'm used to the dimensions of the original Xbox and the PS3. So, yeah, it's pretty large, I guess. Man, I don't know. I got nothing to say on the size of the thing. It's a big game console, and it's new. I'm willing to accept that it'll be miniaturized down the road, and as an early adopter, I'm just glad it's not as big as the original Xbox, which was a monster.
True. But I think it does look pretty close to that.
From a look standpoint, I don't mind it. Yeah, I don't know about going with black by default. I mean, they couldn't have gone with like a nice gray or like a navy or something. You know, kind of change it up. I guess they
wanted to... What happened to Matt?
For a game console?
Yeah, I missed that.
This looks like it has both, doesn't it? Like it has some shiny terrible. And some matte?
I think that's the vents or something. I'm not really sure. But yeah, it does have some shiny bits and some non-shiny bits. So I'm okay with it. It's going to be behind like a glass door in my entertainment center, so it's not like it's going to be out on display. I hide all my gaming consoles that way because I just find none of them to be so visually compelling that I want them to be a centerpiece or something.
What about R2?
R2 being the exception, but he still lives behind a glass enclosure. I know he's there, and he lets me know he's there with his musical voice when I need to talk to him, so yeah. I don't care. I don't care so much about the looks of the system.
Yeah, I mean, it's not anything that would prevent me from purchasing it, but I just was expecting something a little sexier. And I think what adds to the awkwardness is the crazy-looking Kinect.
All I kept thinking of is it looked like some kind of a space weapon, like something that would be in orbit ready to destroy you over a planet. It's kind of imposing looking, isn't it?
The funny thing is, to me, it actually looks like it's spying on you. It looks like it's watching your every move.
Yeah, it does. It's weird. It's kind of off-putting the way it looks. It's so square and so, like, angular, which I normally love, but I guess the other Kinect looked so sexy that this one just looks like a bulky black box prototype in comparison, I guess. I don't know.
Well, they wanted that. They wanted to keep the sharp edges consistent with the system, I guess.
Right, and I get why they did it, but it just seems odd. I don't know. But it is intriguing that the new Kinect will actually work in complete darkness. If you watched just the Xbox Live presentation, you didn't quite get all the same stuff that Spike covered. They did a little after-show thing, and they went into a couple of the different areas of the factory and whatnot, and they were showing like testing of the controllers. They went over the controller layout, what's new about it, what's different about it. As well as the Kinect, they were talking about the different performance issues and showing the new performance enhancements and how you can use it in comparison to the flaws of the original version of the Kinect. So it was pretty cool. So yeah, working in complete darkness is one of the things. It doesn't really rely so much on light like it used to, which might explain why there's only one eyeball on it now, when I think there was like three on the other one. So
there were, yeah. I inferred superior capabilities based on what the guy said, but yeah, I maybe should have watched some supplementary material to get a better picture. But Let's get into the specific bits now of the presentation. We've got the look out of the way. We're kind of meh on that. Again, to touch on their positioning of this thing as a set-top box, first presenter was the president of their interactive entertainment business. He said some things that I found to be... He proposed to provide solutions for problems I didn't know I had. For example, one of the fundamental new questions that would have to be asked as we go forward is, I mean, and this is a question I never knew required a moment's thought until that presentation. Can we improve a living room that is too complex, too fragmented, and too slow by harmonizing your experiences? I don't feel any of those things about my living room at present, but I guess so, if you want basically everything channeled through your Xbox.
I kind of thought we tackled that question when the controller would power the system on. I thought that was good enough for me.
Well, now you won't have to bother with a controller. They are all about these voice commands, which I think ties into another key slogan, that the Xbox One is simple, instant, and complete, or provides an experience which encapsulates those three things.
I liked that.
I do too. How they achieve those things, I think there are maybe some technical trade-offs that I'd like to discuss when we get to that segment in a moment. Basically, final thing I'll cite based on this guy's presentation, which lets you know that they want this to be a set-top box. And here's another quote. Team Xbox is on a new mission to design and build an all-in-one system to light up a new generation of games, TV, and entertainment. That makes me feel warm and fuzzy. Man, I'm going to have like three consoles. None of these guys are going to be my center, my be-all, end-all center of everything. My cable box does that, I think.
Not for long.
To play devil's advocate, I guess, why don't you think the Xbox will do that, and then you can just use the Xbox to connect the other consoles?
You see, I'm not clear on... I think they're letting you switch between video gaming as in terms of Xbox gaming and TV and all these other things, but I don't... It seems like they were maybe letting on that this thing would like let you control all of your devices, but I didn't see anything where it was like, hey, Xbox, switch over to my PS4 input now. I want to play that.
Well, I'm sure you can say like, you know, Xbox auxiliary and there you have it or whatever.
Oh, if it has like, does it have auxiliary ports and stuff? That I didn't really gather. Was there anything in the Spike presentation to indicate such?
No, but I kind of am a little bit on the side with Brian there. I think it would be features that make sense. So I kind of got the impression that they're probably there. Would I put money on it? No, but do I expect them to be there? Probably, yeah.
Okay, if it can actually take the pain out of me having to switch my remote control, you know, inputs on my remote and everything.
That's what I inferred from all of their mumbo jumbo they were spewing at us. Is I kind of took it as, you know, now you can just plug your cable right into there and you're good to go.
If I can do that and basically like, hey, find Game of Thrones, tune in, you know, what's on HBO.
Okay, now
that's cool.
You know, my big question is the cable a provider-specific situation like it is right now?
Yes.
I don't believe that it is 100%.
Well,
I think if you switch to TV, that's your television feed. That's just like a switcher input box type of thing. But if you want to use the guide, that was clearly marked as Xfinity. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, and that's...
So I think it's a combination. I think you're going to be able to use your regular cable box on it with it as a switching device. But if you want the next level deep of complete connect control, then you will have to have the specific provider.
If I went that level deep, are you saying that I would be able to basically not use my cable box and use the Kinect as a cable box essentially?
Yeah.
If I had the Xfinity. Okay, cool. I was wondering how tied it would be to specific provider, and I listened more carefully on my second viewing, and the guy giving the presentation said, oh yeah, this is Comcast here in my area, and that's who's providing my cable.
But
I don't know.
But they did also specify local. Until they went to the guide thing, then they never mentioned anything ambiguous or specific. But it was branded as Xfinity. So
if I have Xfinity, and then depending on my market, I switch over to Verizon, Fios, or some other cable provider, or UVerse or something, will this thing handle that too? Or, you know, I
think it'll handle the big ones. I think they're going to work with a couple of different companies.
Okay.
Well, right now they're only using the one, so, but it would make sense to use multiples, obviously.
Wonder if you can use it with satellite too. Something to ponder. What were your feelings on the universal gestures? Those, that seemed kind of like a neat, I don't want to say gimmick, but a kind of a neat feature where the guy was just sort of grabbing, it's sort of, and I know this is hackneyed by now, but it was sort of Minority Report inspired in that he was manipulating objects that weren't there with his hands.
I thought they did a good job on making it something that wouldn't accidentally happen, but something that also made complete sense and seemed logical. But at the same time, you're right, it was a little hacky, but they didn't seem to like play on it too much, like, hey, look at this. It was more just like they glossed over it, and I think that's how it should be treated. It's not something that you're going to buy the system for, but I thought it was definitely neat that it's in there, and how they implemented it wasn't going to be, you know, mistakenly changing your screen when you don't want it to.
Like you're playing Steel Battalion or something.
Or beating off like you're watching porn and, oh my god, it keeps changing channels!
Oh, it keeps Skyping my dad while I'm trying to watch porn. This is really not good.
I was a little worried about it until I saw him using his cell phone.
Oh, yeah. So meaning it didn't pick up those gestures mistakenly, Brian?
No, he was using his cell phone to do some of the finer stuff. He was using, like, smart glass, I guess.
He was. Yeah. He was.
So as long as you can use smart glass, too.
This guy was, his name was Youssef Mehdi, I think, and he's in the same division as the previous fellow. He's like a senior VP, and he was more going through the actual features. And he didn't explicitly say smart glass, but he was using his phone, and it was only later that they confirmed, oh yeah, by the way, smart glass like works really well now. But yeah, he was the finer point things, he was using his phone to sort of drill down, right? So the broad stroke gestures or movement, and then what, Brian, is your impression that you get in on the more granular things with the phone?
Yeah, that's kind of how the smart glass is now, too, so makes sense.
As long as it's an option. Like, I like the maneuvers, but I can kind of just see not wanting to do them all the time. So long as there is a controller you can use, too.
I hope I can just use a controller to do all this. I assume I can. How do you feel about... They all show this other feature. This was still during Yusuf's presentation, called Snap Mode, where you snap basically apps or features onto the side of your screen. So he did like Xbox Snap Internet Explorer, and then the browser popped up on the side. And then he did the same thing with like Fantasy Football and other things. I guess that was kind of cool. You're basically like throwing an app up on your screen on demand.
Picture in picture.
Yeah, picture in picture.
Kind of like app, like, and picture.
Yeah, well, it's like multiple windows too. I mean, you could be playing a game and then pause your game and then snap in. Okay, perfect example. I'm sitting there playing Terraria 2.0 on my Xbox One, and I need to check the wiki because I found this new ore and have no idea what kind of recipes I could use. So I, you know, snap in my Internet Explorer. And then, you know, look up the crap I need to on the wiki, and then back to my game, I'm good to go. Right now, I actually have to hold my tablet beside me to do that, and it's kind of annoying. So I think it's a cool idea.
Yeah, I do too. I'll be more compelled to use these features if I can do so while being exceedingly lazy, which I am. I don't want to reach for anything or go out of my way. If it's super simple to like, throw me Internet Explorer.
Well, you saw like even on his favorites, he said, you know, Star Trek favorites, crap like that. So there were voice controls, but I think he went to the smart glass just to show that, okay, now you're three things. You've got a hand gesture, a voice gesture, and a control
and smart
gesture.
Glass. Yeah. Right. In fact, when he was exercising those features, he was watching the old Star Trek, getting data about the new Star Trek via the snapped-in Internet Explorer window, and you're pretending to buy tickets with his smart glass app or something like that.
Right.
Or buy them online or whatever. So I thought that guy did a good job of sort of exercising a lot of these set-top box features.
I liked most of the presentation that guy did. It was very cut and dry. It didn't seem like I was getting smoke blown up my ass. And it wasn't like, hey, look at us. It was just like, I believed he thought it was as cool as I thought it was.
Yeah, and he was going through it as a user.
Right.
Some stuffed shirt like, isn't this neat for you guys to play with?
Right.
Like, yeah.
And the speed, dude, was amazing. I can only hope it actually is that fast.
I think it is. And boy, I can't wait to tie this together with a point pretty soon, because I think that all that speed comes at a cost, but let's get into it. The next guy to come out appropriately, they must have put this thing together with our podcast in mind, because this feeds perfectly into our conversation, was this fellow named Mark Witten. I don't know in what department he worked. He was definitely, he was offering technical insight, so maybe some technical department. He was the guy dressed in at least 3 or 4 layers of denim. I didn't think it was possible to have denim layered that deep. But out he came with his creased denim on, and described some of the science behind the science and magic by basically going into some stats for the console. We won't beat those up. Basically, it has like 8 trillion transistors instead of 5 trillion or whatever the 360 had. A buttload of RAM, a Blu-ray player, which is important, I think. Variable power settings. I guess that means it's energy efficient. Not sure what that means. And interestingly, and this is what facilitates the seamlessness and facilitates those 3 bullet points that they mentioned earlier of simple, instant, and complete. It's running 3 operating systems, I think is what they said.
Yep, 3 OS.
One of which is the Xbox operating system. The other is, is a Windows kernel. I'm not sure how scaled down or whatever, but no need to get into that. And the third one handles switching between the two. So while your system is running, you've got basically these 3 operating threads going. You've got you've got an Xbox running, you've got a version of Windows running, and you've got something that handles the switching between the two running. That explains why this works so well. While you're playing a game and you voice command to jump over into a window, it just seamlessly, that listener thread that's going on just says, oh, okay, cool, and just switches between the two like super quick. By design, it's fast. And I hope, Rick, to your point, that it always delivers that speed, because that was cool. But that said, I want to get to a point that one or both of you or maybe all of us brought up in our PS4 episode. Does all of this ability to switch between functions and set-top box and gaming and all this come at the expense of what would have been an even more impressive dedicated gaming console? Because that seems like a lot of resources go into letting you be able to switch like that at all times.
I paid close attention to a few weird things, actually. And one of the things that I did pay attention to, it was like 20 minutes into the 1 hour presentation before they showed a single game.
Yes.
But it was all games after that.
Yeah.
And we also have to remember that this was pre E3 hype. E3 is where the curtain's really going to be opened up. This was a special for EA and a special Activision. So, you know, it was kind of exclusive to those two games or to those, you know, 2 companies and a couple of games. So I didn't really look at it like that. I kind of felt like it was a hardware reveal, not wanting to blow our E3 wad, but we do have a couple of teasers here. So
yeah,
that was my take on it.
If this had been called the Xbox 720 and it was just a hulking new game machine, what I'm asking is, did we lose potential for like even better graphics and stuff so that these other pieces of functionality could be delivered, this set-top box functionality?
I don't think so.
I've said it before. I don't even think we need new better graphics. Like, I'm still perfectly happy with everything we see. So if we did, it doesn't bother me.
I mean, look at the difference of those when they did the side-by-sides from the latest Call of Duty to the new Call of Duty. Dude, I don't think you could go any higher. I think other technology is capable of doing it right now. Yeah. Meaning that I don't think the machine is the limitation. It's the stuff you use to build the stuff that goes on the machine right now that is the limitations.
So you think they basically crammed together, without it being prohibitively expensive, the best gaming console they could, and then added on the set-top box stuff. It's not like they were like, they did like what Nintendo did and basically were like, cheap components for a gaming console and set-top box.
That's what it looked like to me. I mean, it looked like they concentrated almost like two different teams. Okay, game team, you guys go over there and do what you need to do. Entertainment team, you go over there and do what you need to do. And then I'm going to sit here and I'm going to moderate this very BA when you guys come back to me. And we're not snipping anything. Entertainment team, great. Whole checklist, that's going in. Game team, yeah. Whole checklist, that's going in. We're good. Let's unveil this bitch.
And to Brian's point, I don't look at my 360 or my PS3 and think these graphics are terrible.
Right.
But like with every system iteration, you don't realize what's possible till you see the side-by-side. I'm not unsatisfied with these graphics, but now after seeing the little bit that they did reveal, holy crap. I mean, it's not the quantum leap from like 16 to 32 bit that we experienced in the past, but it's still pretty substantial in my opinion. So I was worried about being shortchanged, and I don't think we were on the gaming front.
And I think it's a long-term solution. It seemed like they were planning for an extended run. Not like, let's get something out now that we're going to have to change in 5 years.
You think we're in for another 7-year console iteration here?
I think so, man. I think so. I mean, it could have just been words they were subliminally throwing at me, but I kind of took that away from it.
Interesting observations. The next thing this fellow covered was basically the different control capabilities on the system. He discussed the Kinect, the controller, and Smart Glass. I think we've touched on the Kinect being superior to the previous version. It's more precise, and they showed a model. It could capture more joints now and tell you what leg you're putting pressure on and all this crazy stuff. As you pointed out, doesn't need light.
One thing that they spoke about in the presentation but didn't show, but I actually saw it in action on the Spike part of the show, and that was, again, throwback to one of our discussions about the Kinect on several of our episodes, actually. And that was, remember when we were talking about incorporating, it doesn't have to be you're the controller to use the Kinect, like their whole theory has been up to this far. We were saying use your controller as you normally would and then use the Kinect to enhance it by reaching up and flicking a switch making a voice command to make something happen in a game instead of opening up a menu and selecting something different, all those kind of situations. Well, they spoke about that briefly, but I actually saw it. And their example in the presentation was tell a squad to attack by using your voice or pick up your controller to lift a shield.
Yes.
And that's all they talked about. I saw that in action in a game demo, and it's exactly what we were talking about. The guy had troops with him, and he's like, attack, and then you saw NPCs or, you know, his other guys in his squad come up from behind him and go and do their thing rather than selecting it from a menu. So that was badass. And then as he's getting fired upon, he's lifting up his controller and a shield is coming up over the player on screen's face.
That's cool. So you got to see that executed. It piqued my interest just when he was describing it.
We called it first.
Yes, we did. Nerd Extravaganza, folks. All human thought originates with us.
So I'm very much looking forward to that because I like the idea of the Kinect in general. And the thing that sucks is it either works or it doesn't. I've been lucky and most of the stuff has worked. But to really take it to that next level, they needed to do the Nerdstravaganza version, which was incorporation, not solely controller. And somehow they got the bug in their ear and the fire up their ass, and they're doing it. And I'm looking so forward to that above and beyond anything else because I think it's going to be cool.
Me too, man. Mainly because I want a functional version of
Steel
Battalion. I'm still pissed about
that. That's exactly what I was thinking.
He basically mentioned that Kinect facilitates the bringing together of all the devices, which you just touched on, Rick. And as far as the devices themselves are concerned, better Kinect, you know, more precise. The controller looks good. Looks like they sort of improved on the existing design, which I was happy with. Apparently, they have something now in the triggers called dynamic. They are dynamic impulse triggers where there's actual feedback in the triggers themselves. That could be interesting.
Four points of haptic feedback. Right now, currently, there's only two. and now there's going to be four. Two little ones up by the triggers, and then the same positioning of the ones they have now. So you can focus in and really get a different and better feel.
So when you're firing a gun, like that trigger finger is vibrating too, maybe, or something. It's kind of...
I mean, they already do the haptic feedback on that thing so badass. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It can only be better. Ooh, the integrated battery compartment was a biggie for me because... because I don't know why. I never had a problem with the existing battery compartment.
As long as the battery's rechargeable, I'll be happy with it. But even if it's not, there's going to be aftermarket. I mean, I use aftermarket rechargeable batteries now, and they're fucking great. I just plop it into the, you know, the charging console, and no harm, no foul. It's always ready to go. I've never died, but never had dead batteries, never had to worry about it. So that gave me a little bit of concern. But I did see some pictures with the controller that had a like a standard USB plug. At least that's what it looked like. It looked like a USB.
I hope so. I'd like to just be able to plug it in and charge it to any USB power source. That would be nice.
Yeah.
Anyone excited about the D-pad?
I was just going to go take it away, Brian. That was the best improvement for me.
Like an actual D-pad? You know, one that works? One that's not offset, so you have to hold your controller like you don't really know what it is?
Yes.
Just to actually move forward?
A proper D-pad, thank God. I'm glad you keyed in on that one too, man. That was sort of the only point of failure for me with the Xbox 360 controller, and I'm glad that it looks like they're going to remedy that.
Even the new one that has like the twisty thing and it pops up?
My only version of that controller is my C-3PO one, which after Grant took out of the packaging and got his fingerprints all over, which I had to remove... was then cleaned off and placed in a display case because I thought it was so badass I never wanted to use it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't have experience with that, so I can't really speak to it. Brian, do you have any of the newfangled 360 controllers that have that better?
I have one much newer than my old ones. I have one from the Black Slim Arcade model, and if it's any different, I can't tell.
You should be able to click it, like basically rotate it, right, Rick?
Yeah, you rotate the... little D-pad, the X, and it pops up and becomes a lot higher, and it's more like an old Nintendo NES one.
It's entirely possible. I was just so used to hating it, I never tried that.
Yeah. I think this more traditional-looking proper D-pad seems like it's going to be an improvement either way, or at least an improvement over the original implementation. So happy about that. Let's see, the next... Smart Glass is now natively supported as opposed to being... dealt with through some kind of an application, which I guess means it'll be snappier, more responsive, and more easy to integrate.
Which is cool because it already works really well.
Yeah, for being basically something that they just handed out for free, Smart Glass was shockingly well done, and I'm glad that my fear was that was just going to be like a piece of abandonware. I think I voiced this concern before because they were like, look, we can do the same thing that Wii U can do, and then left it.
But no, we were just a guinea pig test market for this new one, so.
Nice. 10 million downloads on that, by the way. I was shocked how many people. Well, I guess not. It's a huge user base, so I shouldn't be shocked, right? Cool. So, yeah, the Smart Glass is looking good, and the Kinect binds everything together. That's pretty much it for the controls. And the last point he touched on was Xbox Live, where he mentioned that they started with the original Xbox Live with 500 servers back in 2002. When the 360 launched, that grew to 3,000. Today, it's at 15,000. And this year... for Xbox One, we're going to have 300,000 servers.
That's more power. That's more power.
Yes.
Than the entire world had on the internet in 1999. That's crazy.
That was a pretty impressive stat. Now, I want Sony to answer with be like, oh yeah? Well, we're going to build a network that has more power than the whole world had in 2001. So there.
And it's free to use.
Boom. Yeah, so it sounds like they're definitely committed to improved infrastructure, playing up the stored in the cloud aspect of things. So I think there's going to be a lot more online storage, whereas that's a feature that you can basically use your cloud storage as like a memory card right now.
Right.
They're going to have a lot more storage of like your personal videos and stuff. They mentioned native editing and sharing tools. So for your cool game clips, you can apparently do some editing there and I guess store it on your cloud account. And they mentioned something that was intriguing to me, dynamic or changing achievements that are sort of personalized to you as a player.
I didn't understand that, but I liked it.
I wonder if that means you can attach media to your achievement to show how it was gotten, or
probably,
or maybe it like you know, his accuracy with the gun has improved 80%, you know.
That's kind of where I was going, like personal improvement achievements. Like, so God, you sucked at first, but now you're doing all right.
I would like to see more. I would like that, actually. Like, you got killed by Call of Duty players under the age of 12 90 times in your first game. Now you only got killed 45 times. Great job. You're almost as good as a sub-12-year-old. They mentioned some better matchmaking. They also mentioned asynchronous matchmaking. So, and this I didn't quite get. You can go do other stuff. You can go play other games while it finds matches for you on another game. So, like, you can be playing Terraria, Rick, while waiting for a Call of Duty match that suits you to be made. That seems a little ADD, not to be little people with ADD, but that seems a little ADD to me, to be like, I can't wait 30 seconds for a match. I'm going to go play Terraria.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, it's kind of weird. But, you know, maybe they mean, since there's always an OS running, that it's like it's constantly comparing and putting new people into your, you know, it's not thinking when you start the game, it's not out searching for somebody. It's constantly throwing somebody into your queue.
It has a nice pool, a nice set of potential opponents for you at all times, and it tries to match you with them if they're online. Yeah. That might be it. That would be more asynchronous, I think. Yeah.
That really reminded me of EverQuest in like 2000. Hey, I'm a healer, but there's no groups, so I'm going to log on my alt and level them up. Just send me a tell when you need me, and I'll switch.
Oh, man. Basically, you know, you're essentially dual boxing now, Brian. As you did an MMO. Interesting analogy there. This was interesting to me, too. This was something mentioned that game developers could leverage. Apparently, with all these, with this new massive, like, multi-data center infrastructure that Microsoft are rolling out, there's a bunch of computation or operations or something that can be offloaded to their servers. I don't really know what that means in terms of implementation. He basically said that that allows for living/persistent worlds and for better matchmaking. The first point intrigues me because, as you guys know, I love the concept of a changeable, persistent world. So if that means that we're having a space war game on some planet and I blow the top off a mountain and everybody sees that that mountaintop is gone, that would be badass.
Well, they showed something in the Ghost presentation that I thought might be that. They showed it looked like someone blowing a dam and flooding the map.
Whoa.
I thought that may have been a tactic, like, we're going to change this map because I'm really good at swimming or whatever.
Oh, wow. That's pretty far out. So then the map's persistent for a while, so when you log onto that map, it favors swimmers. Interesting.
That, or it was just a QTE, and I was totally suckered by it.
No, that's what it sounded like they were saying. They've implemented things like that where you can change the environment to suit your play styles and play needs.
I'm just imagining these basic, like, ongoing, like, clan wars where, like, you play for 8 hours, you come back the next day, your teammates in Japan have taken over and continue the fight. You come back on. Oh, awesome. You guys destroyed that bridge. All right, now
your unemployed friends come on and...
Right. I try to say worldwide friends, but realistically, it's your friends that have nothing better to do while you're at work.
And they had also mentioned things with weather deterioration, stuff like that. So I think you're right with the persistent existence.
And, you know, it doesn't have to be destructive. You could be, like, all working together to build stuff, you know. There's a lot of potential there if it's anything like what we're imagining. Let's just leave it at that. All right, I think, finally, we got onto games, and we can go through this relatively quickly because if I know us, the first bit is not terribly interesting. From EA, Andrew Wilson presented next, announcing a strategic partnership between EA and Microsoft when it comes to EA Sports. It was all I could do not to just completely tune that bit out. I think he said they might have been exclusive titles. FIFA, Madden NFL, NBA Live, and UFC, and all run on their new gaming engine called Ignite. Not a sports fan, not a sports game fan. You guys?
The only sports game I play, so I play racing games, but the only actual, like, team sport game that I play is hockey, and they didn't have anything hockey, so didn't care.
I think it's really cool that they're actually, like, working with a franchise so closely. I don't know. That kind of made me think, like, they're really thought this out, really taking it seriously.
You mean the NFL cooperation or EA?
Well, no, the NFL. And I mean, I'm sure it's just a matter of time until they do, you know, NHL, NBA, whatever.
Okay.
Like, yeah, I've never played fantasy football, but the whole thing where like your stats automatically update and it's so integrated.
That's actually two different things. The game engine was one thing, and then the fantasy football tie-in that's with their ESPN tie-in.
Yeah, another presenter mentioned that, but I think it's fair to discuss them in tandem, because that is kind of cool. I think there's a lot of potential for NFL game being integrated with fantasy football, being integrated with live football. I mean, maybe you can field a fantasy football team based on how your fantasy football team has. So you can play an NFL game fielding your team based on what has happened in the fantasy football league or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it'll just be a matter of time before you have fantasy football Madden 14 or whatever. Like, the worldwide stats are uploaded to their server and people can play fantasy football in the game.
There you go. That's basically what I was trying to say, Brian.
Yeah, yes. That's all I could think of the whole time they were showing that. I was thinking the exact same thing. That's got to be what this is all working up to.
I think so. And you know what? Good for sports fans. This is going to be lots of people like sports and sports games. So I think this is going to be a pretty compelling platform for them.
Well,
and
you know
I don't
what?
Think there's good any reason to think they won't bring that to other places too.
Like fantasy, Final Fantasy.
Well, I mean, shit, even Lucas working with...
Ooh, yes.
With the Halo movie, like, that's kind
Spielberg.
Of taking... I'm sorry, Spielberg. That's kind of taking it seriously.
When it comes to the entertainment bit. So, okay, that concludes EA. And before we get into the actual entertainment stuff, including that kick-ass Spielberg-Halo partnership, it's worth mentioning that the Phil Spencer, who's head of Microsoft Studios, who seem to be in the business of basically acquiring smaller studios or something and publishing their work. Basically, they're the in-house umbrella, right? They mentioned Forza Motorsport 5, which I thought looked awesome. I enjoyed the previous Forza, and I don't mind a racing game. You guys have any opinions on that?
That looked like some of the best 3D graphics. I don't know if it was in-game or cinematic, but either way, it looked fucking amazing.
Yeah, Brian, I don't know how much of a racing fan you are since, like, Top Gear for the Super NES, but... How did you feel about that?
I was pretty unreal. I'm pretty excited. I don't know. It's just, how far can you take the graphics?
Apparently, limitless.
Yeah,
that's
very
limitless.
Far.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I thought the last Forza game I thought was just incredible. And then I see these graphics. And I'm like, wow. So, yeah, Forza, I was pretty excited about that. Then this development house called Remedy were working on some game called Quantum Break, which seems to be some kind of a concept where you're tying cinema in with game. And I
had no idea what was going on.
I didn't either.
It showed a clip of some lady asking a little girl why she was special, and then it showed her like going off into dreamland, and a ship was crashing into a bridge, and all kinds of crap was happening. No
she's
idea.
Special
because
she's
that.
A lousy pilot.
I'm special because I can imagine destruction. I don't know. They didn't really get into what that was going to be about. I think they wanted to show off, hey, this is us being this ties in with our all-in-one theme, because here you have a game centered around cinema, and what you see in the cinematic scenes is determined by your actions in the game. I don't know. That's just speculation on my part based on what little they showed. It was pretty nonsensical. Basically, he concluded by saying that Microsoft Studios will have 15 exclusive games in the first year, 8 of which will be brand new franchises. So we're going to see some new titles launched, not just a bunch of rehashes of older stuff, which I'm happy about.
Me too.
All right, now we get into what Brian was alluding to. Out came Nancy Tellem, head of Xbox Entertainment Studios, to tell them all about the great entertainment offerings on the platform. They're hard at work on all kinds of comedies, dramas, blah, 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 blah. And Brian... Scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you about the Halo Live action TV series?
Yeah, like a 6. I actually don't like 6. Halo that much. But
oh, you're not a fan of the universe. Okay.
I think it speaks really well for just where they're going. And something, this was subtle, I don't know if it was intentionally subtle or if I was just reading a lot into it, but they very clearly mentioned video game premium television series. So I think you're going to actually have to, like, you're only going to be able to see that on live.
Yeah.
So the Halo live action will be an Xbox Live exclusive.
Yeah.
Wow. And they brought in somebody, they brought in Steven Spielberg. I mean, that's a big deal.
I mean, yeah, they brought in someone like Spielberg to incentivize being a gold subscriber. That's cool.
Agreed. Compelling entertainment options, I think, make gold seem like a better value than just being able to play online with people, right? I mean, but now you'll get top shelf entertainment, so it makes it more enticing, maybe.
Well, you know what? That, like, what is it, 15 a month now, theoretically?
Yep.
That's not a bad price for, like, a Hulu or something. So
yeah.
If they're going to go full tilt with that in the future.
Yeah, with original programming, the same as, like, what Netflix and other sort of streaming services are doing. Yeah. Was there any mention of integration with all the video streaming services? I didn't see that. I assume that we're still going to have the Netflix and the Hulu and the Crunchyroll and all that kind of stuff.
They didn't say anything, but I did see icons for Netflix and Hulu as they were scrolling through different menus. So
it'll still be there. All right, kind of goes without saying. Yeah, so it was the head of 343 Industries or whatever they were called. That's the studio that took over from Bungie when Bungie went away from Halo. She was mentioning the web series and Steven Spielberg. I liked his, like, oh, unfortunately, I couldn't be there because I have much cooler stuff going on. But yeah, this is going to be cool. Look forward to it. And do you think he's telling the truth when he says he's a gamer and has been playing games since Pong? Or was that just
I don't know. He came off like an asshole. He irritated me. It seemed so fucking fake and contrived and insincere. I didn't believe it for a second.
I got that vibe, but I didn't want to believe that because I want Steven Spielberg to be a video game player because he's made so much cool shit over the years.
I'm cool with him being a specialist. He doesn't have to multi-class.
So it's enough that they're bringing him to bear on...
I mean, he's not designing the next Halo game or whatever. So
right, he's letting.
Yeah,
his
but he was out of his element. I think he kind of came across a little
cool.
I saw Pong when I was young. That means I've been a lifelong gamer.
And Pong came out in 1972, not 1974. Steve.
He was playing Pong Plus.
Whatever. He was playing the version created by Steve Weeb and fucking
and
Billy Mitchell.
If he got the date wrong, that definitely lends to the insincerity angle. So gosh. I'll still believe it, just because I want to. Moving on, basically, they gave us a launch date of later this year, which we already knew. Nothing. Hopefully we'll hear a more solid date in E3.
Some interesting speculation I happen to see. I guess the Ghost launch date is 11/5, and being a launch title, can kind of assume.
Okay, November. That was sort of what we all were thinking anyway. And speaking of that, that's the last point that I think we want to touch on. It's the last thing they covered in the presentation. Call of Duty Ghosts, or as I now call it, and will always call it, Call of Doggy Ghosts.
Modern Wolfare.
Modern Wolfare. Good. I have written in all caps in my notes, and this is no embellishment, you now have an army dog in your squad. He has armor and a little helmet. I couldn't stop thinking about the dog after watching the presentation.
And you'll care about him. Kimberly's comment was, dog's the only thing in that game I'd care about.
Yeah.
I prefer the Battlefield games, but I still play Call of Duty. If that dog is going to be in harm's way, I'm going to be concentrating the whole time on preventing him from being hurt. Because he's so cute. Like, they couldn't have made him an ugly dog or something.
He has those nasty scars on his nose. So
he does.
He's obviously a tough one.
And he's modeled after a real Navy SEAL dog, which means there's a real dog that cute who's going into battle with armor, hopefully with armor and that cool little headband helmet thing on. But the dog was only one example of, like, the graphics, which we mentioned earlier, which were holy crap. That was when they really knocked me over the head with what this thing could do in terms of graphical power. I was really impressed.
I definitely was.
Probably sounds really weird if you haven't seen the video, but yeah, that guy's hairy arm was really killer.
Yeah, when they showed that guy's arm with the bruises, the veins, and then, like, the up close on his hands, that impressed me more than, you know, all the shadows and all the other shit. Like, that particular piece, I was like, what the fuck? That is insane.
It looked like a friggin' human arm. Yeah, because, like, under, like, the under part of his arm where the skin's lighter, you could see, like, the it's not like bulging veins. You could see like the subsurface, like blue veins. Like
it looked real. It looked real. It was awesome.
Like a real arm. Yeah, the graphics in that were just kind of mind blowing. They brought in this guy Steven Gagan. I don't know how to pronounce it. Who I guess is responsible for a couple of popular movies. What, Traffic and Syriana? One of which
that
I think
guy looks like a creep.
Who cares what he looks like as long as he writes a good story? Sounds like they're really pulling out all the stops with this game, taking the Call of Duty franchise in a new direction. And I would say that this was, from a game perspective, the highlight of the event. Got me excited. Definitely got me excited about the system. And with that said, I think this discussion about the Xbox One is coming to an end. Any further comments, observations?
I was disappointed that we have still yet to get confirmation for or against the use of used games.
Yeah, that wasn't mentioned at all, was it?
It's still all up in the air. So any PS4 people out there, don't be haters, don't be dickheads, because nobody knows yet, so shut it.
I kind of wanted a price, too.
I think we'll get that at E3, probably.
Well, I think that is a wrap, then. With that being the case, I would encourage all of our future Xbox One owners. Huh, can you use iTunes on the Xbox One? Well, regardless, you can use iTunes on your personal computer. And if you are a fan of iTunes, we strongly encourage you to subscribe to the Nerdstravaganza podcast. In addition to that, write us an awesome review. Think of it as sort of a personalized achievement. It'll be immortalized, your awesome review. And rate us 5 out of 5 stars, and that will increase your gaming rep.
And if you don't like the iTunes, you can head on over to www.nerdstravaganza.com, where you can download the show, stream the show, rate the show, leave us a comment, all kinds of good stuff.
Like us on Facebook and join our group. We'll probably be discussing this Xbox thing for a month or two.
Yeah, as news comes out. Well, with that said,
peace!